So we're holding at the bottom of Kuf Tes Zayin Omer Aleph, three lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of discussing what Yisrael heard that made him come to the Jewish people. By Yishma Yisrael Kayin Midyan. So of course, in general, he heard about Yisrael Mitzrayim, Ki Hoiti Hashem Et Yisrael Mitzrayim. But what specific piece of news is what impelled him to come? So we had Rabbi Yeshua saying that he heard about Melchamas Amalek. Hello. We had Rabbi Yeshua saying that Yisrael heard about Melchamas Amalek. We had Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi said that he heard about Matan Torah. And now we're going to have a third opinion. What Yisrael heard that impelled him to come. That he heard about, the point is that he heard about Yisrael Mitzrayim, very nice. Okay, so Yisrael Mitzrayim. That doesn't necessarily make him that, okay, well, I'm going to pick myself up from Midian and come all the way into the desert to join the Jewish people. But when, we're discussing what Yisrael heard that made him come to join the Jewish people. So it's one thing. He heard, the prophet says that he heard Shehoshi Hashem at Yisrael Mitzrayim. Very nice. But that means, okay, he heard the news. Very exciting news. That's not necessarily enough to make him pick himself up and move from Midian and come to the Midbar, to the middle of nowhere. There had to have been something else. There had to have been something specific that he heard, some piece of news that made him realize it's not just good enough for me to stay in Midian where I am. I have to come there. So what is it?
We're
trying to prove. Ultimately, we're mentioning that there was a Machloekes Tanoim when Yisrael came. Was it before Matan Torah or after it? Which ties into the discussion that we were having whether Bnei Noach are able to bring Shlomo. It says in the passage over there that Yisrael offered Shlomo. By Yikach Yisrael Choytem Moshe, Oilot was Zachim Lelekim, and Zachim means Shlomo. So if you say he came before Matan Torah, you would have to say that Bnei Noach are able to bring Shlomo. If you say that he came after Matan Torah, then there's no proof one way or the other. Because he became a Ger, he's now a Jew, and as a Jew, of course, he's allowed to offer Shlomim. But that doesn't mean necessarily that had he remained a Goy, he couldn't have also brought Shlomim, so we wouldn't know. So we were discussing, then we have three different opinions. That's why we're talking about it. And so we mentioned there's three different opinions. But Tanoim, what is it that he heard? Rabbi Yeshua said he heard about Melchamas Amalek. Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi said that he heard about Matan Torah. And three lines from the bottom. He heard about Kriyas Yamsuf, Ovar, and that made him come. Shanema, as you have later on in Yeshua, described a similar thing by Hiti Shmoya Kol Malchei HaEmori. It says over there that when all the kings of the Emorim heard about the splitting of the Yardin and the Yidden entered out of Israel, then they were all frightened. So how much more so, says Marasha, when it came to Kriyas Yamsuf, where it was splitting the sea and drowning the stream, how much more so that everybody in the whole world heard about it? So Yisrael also heard about it, and according to this opinion, that's what impelled them to come. Now, if we say he heard about Melchamas Amalek, or he heard about Kriyas Yamsuf, then it means he came before Matan Torah. Both of those things happened sometime before Matan Torah. There wouldn't be reason for him to wait until, yeah. On the other hand, if you say that he heard about Matan Torah, obviously he just came only after it. So that's the point. Now, what's the deeper idea behind various explanations about what made him come? Something that Maharal talks about, there's kind of a yamin, smoil, and emsa thing going on over here. The right, the left, and the middle, like chesed, gvura, tiferet, sort of. Kriyas Yamsuf is primarily an expression of chesed. Fighting Amalek and beating them is primarily an expression of gvura. Giving the Torah is an expression of tiferet, the blend of chesed and gvura. So the question is, which of those like spoke to him most to make him come?
He's
realizing his brother Hashem we call out him. Okay. Now Rashi on the Pasuk mentions only Kriyas Yamsuf and Melchamas Amalek. Rashi doesn't mention him hearing about Matan Torah. Now Rashi does go on to say that later on, next part, when Yisrael sees Moshe judging the people and he says, how can you do it all by yourself, et cetera, that part has to be after the Lukas Shmias, after the Inquisitor. But Rashi doesn't seem to take a position on the earlier part of it, whether it was necessarily before or after Matan Torah. There are sichas about it. In those sichas, the devil also brings in this connection what the Zohar says, that it was before Matan Torah, and in fact, Yisrael coming and announcing after Yadayitu to Gagal Hashem Nikol HaElekim was an essential prerequisite without which the Torah couldn't have been given. This, that Yisrael came and said, now I understand that Hashem is greater than any other power in the world, the Zohar says that was a necessary prerequisite. Without that, the Torah couldn't have been given. So the Zohar is coming. he realized on his own when he heard about the Sias Mitzrayim and whatever else was saying, I mean, before Matan Torah, in other words, the Zohar is saying, once he heard about the Sias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf and Melchamas Amalek, that made him realize that God Hashem is Kol HaElokim, and the Zohar says that was without that, the Torah couldn't have been given, obviously meaning that he came before Matan Torah. So there's a sikha where the Rebbe talks about the idea that he heard Kriyas Yamsuf and Melchamas Amalek. One idea of it is that Kriyas Yamsuf is the idea of joining, it's the beginning of the process of joining together, of joining together the two different parts of reality. Almadis Gafya, Almadis Galya, the hidden world, the revealed world. So that's one thing that impelled him. On the other hand, though, he's also hearing that Amalek came and attacked the Jewish people, which means that Avodah is far from complete yet. Therefore, he realized I have to come and join along with that and give up my high position as Kohen Midian and come and do my part for that. I once also saw a different idea, and it may also be from a Sikha, I'm not sure, that what it is that Yisrael hears about Sias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yam Sof, all these tremendous Gilui Alakus, but then he hears, but you know what, on the other hand, you have a Amalek, who your J.S., your Bonium, and Gavin Limerick, bro, you have an Amalek who can know about Hashem, and yet go and knowingly rebel against him, so he realizes to himself, you know what, it's not just enough to intellectually know about these things, because Amalek also intellectually knows, and you see where they ended up. I have to actually come and join. I have to actually throw myself into it.
They say that Kriyas Yam Sof happens throughout the world, and all the going souls.
Yeah, I knew so.
So what does it say by Yishma?
So he heard about it. Okay, so he heard about it. He heard that it happened.
He
heard. That made him come. Yeah, he's fine. He saw the water splitting. That in and of itself doesn't tell him what's going on. Afterwards, he heard. Why did it split? Because it split for the Jewish people to let them through and to drown in the stream. All right, so let's go on. The Ask Rochav Azoyna Omra L'Shlucha Yeshua. We find a similar thing that at the after Yeshua sends his two Meraglim, right before they come into Eretz Yisrael, Saptoro Parsh at the beginning of Sefer Yeshua, Saptoro Parsh Shlach, they go to the house of Rochav Azoyna, and she tells them, you should realize what an impression Kriyas Yamsuf made on us, Ki Shemaynu, because we've heard Eta Shehovish Hashem Esnei Yamsuf, that Hashem dried up the waters of Yamsuf. Even though it was 40 years later, she's still saying it made a very powerful impression on us. But therefore, by the same logic, then Rebbe Lozer, say Rebbe Eliezer, is saying the same logic, or Rebbe Lezer, and Yaakov, it says on the bottom, is saying by the same token, it made a very powerful impression on Yisrael, and that's what made him realize he had to come. So the question is, now what's the difference? In the terminology of the Pasuk, after the Yarden is split, and the Yidden crossed over into Eretz Yisrael, it says that there was no spirit left there was no spirit anymore in the goyim of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it was much easier to conquer them.
It seems to add to what we were saying yesterday. Yisrael came to the Yiddish God only because he saw in favor the power of Hashem. He didn't see Hashem beyond favor as the
goyim. Okay, could be. All right, anyway, let's go on.
So that's an
Could be. Anyway. So now what's the difference when Rochav is speaking to the, two Meraglim a few days before that, Jekama, or Amra really, she says, there's no spirit has stood up in any man. So why is she using the expression stood up and in any man instead of the similar terminology, but like it says later on, after the splitting of the Yarden, the answer is she was hinting by that, the Afilu Akshuli Nami Loi Akshu. She meant by that, literally, it didn't stand up by any man, meaning, in other words, no man at that time, they were terrified by hearing about Kriyas Yam Sof, that none of them were, to put it boldly, able to get it up. None of them were able to get a kishur. So the question is, where does she know that? Because, then the answer is, because she was Rochav HaZoyna. So Amamar, we learn in a Braisa, it's funny, actually. The pasuk called the Rochav HaZoyna. You have some of the Mefarshim where you have the Targum translated as Pundakisa, an innkeeper. So you have some of the Mefarshim. I think the Radak, for example, says it's actually meant as a euphemism. Just like an innkeeper is open to anybody and sells anybody food. So also with her, it was a Zoyna in the more straightforward sense. Anyway, the point is, so the Amamai, we learn in a Braisa, Ein loch kofar v'nogid, shalai ba'a rochav azoyna. There wasn't a single nobleman or prince who didn't have relations with Rachav. So therefore, she's saying, I know what happened at that time after Kriyas Yom Tov. Business fell off. Because nobody could, because the light come out rock face. That's why she's using it. Right, there was no kishur. Because they were so terrified. They didn't know they're not going to end up spending 40 years in the Midbar. As far as they knew, in the next couple of weeks, the Jews are coming in. So they're all terrified. We say every day in davening, in Od Yosher, where Shomu Amin Yugodun, Chilach Od Yosher Sloshes, Od Nibalu Alafay Edom, Eden Yamnamogu Ko Yosher Knan, they were all terrified. That everybody was terrified. New Chil Ochaz, a terror, trembling, seized the people of Pleshet, of the Plishtim. Oh, New Halu Alufay Edom, the dukes of Edom are terrified. Eilid Moyav Yechazim Agad, the mighty men of Moyav are seized the trembling. The Moygo Koyeshe Knan, the people of Knan are all melting away. And see, this is Kriyas Yom Tov, that's the point. Now, 40 years later, Rachav is informing the Meraglim, you should realize what a powerful impact that had on us. Omru, so they said, Bas Yudsha. That was afterwards. They ended up spending 40 years in the Midbar. The Goyim at that time didn't know in advance that's going to happen. Omru, so what happened? The Chachamim said, Bas Yudshanim Hoysef Shiyotu Yisrael Mitzrayim. This Rachav was 10 years old when he didn't left Mitzrayim. The Zinta Kol Nemshana, the next 40 years, while the Yidden were in the Midbar, she is being the Zana, she's open for business as Rachav Hazana. Now when she's 50 years old, then she realizes the truth that Hashem is a lekin b'shamayim imav alayis b'shachas, as she says there in the process, and she became a giyur. Eventually, the Gemara tells us in Megillah she married Yeshua, no less. Obviously, he wouldn't have married her if he didn't want her. Why not? She's a giyur. He's allowed to marry her. And in fact, the Gemara also says over there that she had this close 8 Nevi'im, and some say 9 Nevi'im descended from her. Anyway, Omra, so she it pays to be a Baal of Shuvah and a Giyar. Come on. Omra, she said, Yehei Mohuli Chavo Chaloyno Pishkin. She says like this to Hashem, please forgive me for my many years of Averis because of the rope and the slats and the windows. Namely like this. So Rashi explains that like this, as a Zona all these years, now the prophet mentions her house was built into the wall. That's how the Meraglim were able to sneak out. She lowered, so what happened when the Meraglim first come to her house, so the king's agents are coming and looking for them. It says she hid them among the flax bundles that are drying on her roof. Later on, when she needs to sneak them out of the city, she can't let them out the front door because soldiers are guarding. So she lets them down on a rope. She lets them down on a rope from the window, and that way they're outside the city. The house was built into the wall.
But which part of the wall?
What do you mean, which part of the wall? Someplace along the height of the wall. Her house was built into the thickness of the wall, or some part of her house anyway, was built into the thickness of the wall. So she had a window overlooking the outside of the city. Anyway, the point is, Rashi says, so all those years she had been using these same three things to do Averis with. When people wanted to sneak into her place with Nus, she would do the same thing. She'd pull them up using the rope through the window, and if necessary, hide them among the flax. And when they were leaving, if they needed to sneak out, same thing. So now she's saying, Hashem, since I used those very same three things to save the Meraglim, the Jewish Meraglim, then please be moichel me on that account for having used these same three things for Averis all these years. Marsha brings us the flax, the window, and the rope. Yeah. Marsha brings a different thing, that she said, all these years, having remained a goiter, I was missing out on the three mitzvahs of Jewish women, chalam, yidad, wachat, and ner. So now, Hashem, she says, now that I'm going to become a geyorist, in the schus that I used these three things to save the Meraglim, please forgive me for having neglected those three things all these previous years and not having been this guy previously. Anyway, the point is, that's a side thing. The Gemara is mentioning why Rachav used that expression, like, come or Rachvish. But the point is, that we see that Kriyas Yom Tov had a very powerful effect on the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael, so much so that Rachav remembered it 40 years later. So by the same token, it had an effect at the time on Yisrael, and according to this opinion, that's what made him pack up and move to join the Jews. All right. Now getting back to, for the main topic we were talking about, we brought a braisa on Kof Tet Vav Amud Beis earlier in the Sugya that mentioned that before the Mishkan was set up, there were different rules of korbanos. The avodah was done by the chorim. The korbanos could be brought anywhere, and any kind of animal could be brought for korbanos. Chorim, the kavis, wild animals, domestic animals, as long as it was behemoth tahorah. And he said, the braisa continued, omamar, the ovdika chavim, bezmanazera, showing last of king. Goyim nowadays are allowed to do exactly the same thing. They're allowed to be makruv korbanos anywhere. They're allowed to be makruv any type of behemoth tahorah. Non-immediately, where do we know that from? It's on an Abban, because we learn in a Braisa. When it says in the parasha of Shchotichot, in the parasha of Achrimos, Dabar of Bnei Yisrael, Hashem says, speak to Moshe, speak to the Jewish people, and tell them that anybody who shechts a korban or offers a korban outside the Beit HaMikdash is Chayav Kares. That means Bnei Yisrael, the children of Shchotichot, Bein Erev Kovim, the children of Shchotichot. It means only Jews are commanded not to do Shchotichot, Goyim or not. Therefore, call therefore, even nowadays, any goy is allowed to build himself his own private bama, or makrivalea, call mashayusa, and he can offer on it whatever he wants. Whatever he wants, again, meaning any type of kosher animal or bird, it still means, as we said before in the Gemara, that he can only bring oil. And according to one opinion in Menachos, he can also bring shlamim, but it can be any type of animal. Amar of Yaakov, Amar of Asi, also, l'sayon v'lasa shlichusa. Now, you should know, though, in that regard, you're not allowed to help them and to be a shliach for them in that regard during a time when bomers are also, like nowadays, you're not allowed, if a goy decides that he wants to bring a korban, you're not allowed to help him, for example, build the mizbeach or offer the korban or whatever, because you, as a yid, are also to do shlichus. In fact, Tosfos says, why is he even using the expression author? We should say she's chayav kares for it. Author implies it's just you shouldn't do it, but, you know, as Tosfos says, among other things, Tosfos gives an answer, because after all, we've learned in the Mishnah, there are various avodas that a person could do where he's not chayav kares. We learned in the Mishnah, for example, a person does, for example, the Kabbalah, he's not chayav kares. If he does the mixing of the mincha, he's not chayav kares, and a whole bunch of other things. So therefore, we're saying even those things, even though he's not chayav kares, and even though he's doing it for a goy, nevertheless, you're still not allowed. However, Rabba says, as Rava, however, you are allowed to teach the goyim how they should go about doing it. You're allowed to teach them the relevant halachas, what they should do, and give them instructions what they should do about if they want to bring a korban. As we have an example, that Iphra Hormiz, who is the mother of King Shabur. King Shabur was the king of Persia in Rava's time. We've had Iphra Hormiz and we've had Shabur Malka before. Yeah, they appear in a number of places in Shah. Rashi mentions in various places, Shabur, or whatever, yeah. I think in Persian it's Shapur with a P. I don't know, what's his name? I don't know. Shah probably means king, and poor, I don't speak Persian. Yeah, whatever, come on. Okay, whatever. So Ifrahum is the mother of Shabur Malka, and Rashi mentions in various places that she was very respectful of Yiddishkeit and of some of the Chachamim. There's one place Rashi mentions, I think, in Nidah, that even she was, I think Rashi uses the expression sometimes, she was korev l'dat Yisrael. She was, like, close to keeping, she was close to keeping Yiddishkeit. Like, she kept various mentions over there of connection with Dam Nida, for example. Shodra Kurbana L'Rava, one time she sends an animal to Rava for a korban, Sholchalei, and she sends him along a message with it, Askur Nialei L'Shem Shemayim, go and be makruv this L'Shem Shemayim. Now this is a few hundred years after the korban by Shem. So there's no possibility of offering it in the Mishmikdash. So how do we go about it? Omolahu L'Rav Sakra L'Rav Achabahuna. So Rava tells Rav Safra and Rav Acha Bar Huna, here's how we should go about it. Zilu, go, udvaru tre ulome guloi, go and find and fetch two young goyish boys that are guloi, Rashi says, bnei gil echad, they're the same age, or they have a similar appearance, or whatever. Now, that a goyim is required, as we're saying in our Gemara over here. That they have to be the same age or appearance is not specifically required. Up yalaka, Rashi just says, she came noila, rubber. That way it looks nicer. It's more aesthetically pleasing when you have two people who look the same or the same age or whatever doing the avodah together. Then Yoyada says a different interesting reason. He says, what it could be is, like this, what if Ifrahum is asked, knew, why, I told you you should be not for it, why are you having goyish kids doing it? Because they could tell her, look, you know, our rules require that you have two kids who look similar. So we did, we held audition, we didn't find any Jewish kids, so of necessity we had to take goyish kids. Anyway, okay, the two Ulame Guloi, two Goyish boys of a similar age or appearance. Marsha says, by the way, why that's the boys is because the Gemara is going to talk about soon the idea that the various things that are used for the korban should not have previously been used for other kinds of work, for other kinds of purposes. So by the same logic, you want boys who have never yet done work, right, who have never yet done work, or who never have done any mundane work. Okay. V'chazu heicha d'maske yamashit. Then Rabbah continues, go find a place where the sea casts up mud or soil or whatever, because that way, again, it's ground and dirt that have never been used for mice ahead yet, and that you can use to build the mizeach. The shakl sivi chabati, or not, you can use it to build the mizeach. These Goyish boys can use that to build the mizeach, this mud. The shakl sivi chabati, take new wood, again, not wood from kalim that have been used and now broken apart, but wood that has never been used before, like it's just been freshly cut. The apiku nura mimora chabda, make a fire using a new spade. The Rashi describes that if you use a spade and you strike it against stone like nowadays in a cigarette lighter to make a spark to start a fire. Yeah. Va'piku nura and bring out fire mimorachabta using a new spade. Again, the same idea. It's not respectful to Hashem to be using something that was previously used for mundane purposes. Vasku and Neil L'Shem Shemayim, and then good. These two Goyish boys can go and be master of that korban L'Shem Shemayim. And that way we'll accomplish what is for whom, what Queen is for whom is wanted. Amalei Abaya, Abaya says to Rava, why do you need all those details? Why do you need young boys? Why do you need an area where there's shirtain, where there's unused mud? Why do you need unused wood, etc.? Kiman Kirbalaza ben Shamua. Apparently you, Rava, are going in that like Kirbalaza ben Shamua. Who says that is necessary? The time Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua Omer, Ma Mizbeach Shalei Shtamesh Behayit, that Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua says that just as the Mizbeach is something that was not used by a Hayit, Mizbeach and the Bet Mikdash wasn't used for any other mundane purposes, it was used for Korbanos, Af Eitim Shalei Shtamesh Behayit, so the wood that's used for Korbanos also has to be something that wasn't previously used for mundane purposes. So you can't use as wood on the Mizbeach. You can't have, for example, a wooden keli that was broken or taken apart or whatever, and you're going to use the wood for carbonus. Okay, but if you're going to say like that, but don't we see that even Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua agrees when it comes to a bummer, those rules don't apply. So why are you, Rava, insisting that you have to have where the shirt that with a bummer, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua is saying it could have been used previously. So therefore, why are you insisting that the ground has to be new ground and the wood has to be new wood, etc.? Titania. We'll see. Titania, as we learn in the Braisa. Now we have like this. We have twice in Tanakh, once at the end of Shmuel Beis, as you call it nowadays, and once in Divrei Yomim. It describes the story of how David has the idea to count the people, and to make a long story short, a plague breaks out, and then thousands of Jews are dying, and then Hashem tells David, go to the granary of Aravna Hayabusi, or Ornon, he's called in Divrei Yomim, which is in Yerushalayim, and buy that place from him, and set up a mizbeach there and offer korbanos to Hashem, and then the plague will stop. So, in two places, this describes the story, but there's slightly different details there of
how the story without the plague.
Okay, so the original thing is that the passage starts by saying, by Yotis Hashem of David, that Hashem, so to speak, incited David to count the Jewish people, and actually Yoav tried to talk him out of it, but whatever. The Medrash says, actually, that ultimately the different Medrashim give two reasons behind it. One is that one Medrash mentions that after this is when David realized he has to set up a thing that people have to say brachas regularly. That's when he set up the thing that a person has to say 100 brachas every day. I don't know if that's the same plague, actually. That might be a different one, but whatever. The different Medrash says that what it is the Jews at that period were not particularly looking forward to the Beit Mikdash being built. And actually, based on what we're learning in our Perek, you can sort of understand their mentality. Like, just no Beit Mikdash means they can build bombers and bring carbonates anywhere. So why should we have to give that up? You see, during the whole first Beit Mikdash, they kept on doing bombers. Hashem was displeased with that. They should be looking forward every moment to the Beit Mikdash being built. So therefore, Hashem had to sort of speak force the issue. Like this, they finally discover where the Makom HaMikdash is and set up a mizbeach, and that's the first stage of building the Beit Mikdash. And as the Gemara is going to say here, they collected money from the entire Jewish people to buy it. So therefore, okay. Anyway, so cost of Echadai. Now, one. So one pasuk in Divrei Hayamim describes what did David do? Vayiten David laOrnon b'machon. David gave to Ornon, which is another name for Arauna, b'machon in that place. Shiklei Zahav, golden shkol, the mishkol sheishmei it's called, a weight of 600 shekel. Now that's in Divrei Hayamim. Okay, but then on the other hand, at the end of Shmuel, it says Vayiken David hagodin v'etabach of the kesef shkolim commission. It says that David bought the granary and the cattle for korbanos at a value of 50 silver shkolim. So what is it? Did he pay 50 or did he pay 600? Okay, so how do we reconcile that?
650.
No, Goyven. Goyven because shevet the shevet chamishim. What he did is he collected 50 shkolim from each shevet. There are 12 shvatim. 12 times 50 is 600. For the shehin sheishmeir. So that comes to a total of 600. So that's the one pasuk is mentioning how much he took from each individual shevet, and the other pasuk is mentioning the aggregate amount. Rebbe Omer Mishum Abba Yossi Ben Destoy. Rebbe says in the name of Abba Yossi Ben Destoy a different. We're not finished yet. We have to first quote the entire. We have to first quote the entire braisa. Then after we do that, we'll see how this relates to what we were talking about having everything used. Keep in mind that this mizbeach that David built over there, even though eventually it became the site of the mikdash, at the time it's a bama like any other bama. So at the time the mishkan isn't given. So doesn't matter how far it is. The point is it's not the same place.
So
I don't know, someplace north of Yerushalayim nowadays probably one of the northern neighborhoods of Yerushalayim, the most maybe or something. I don't know. Anyway. Ramos, I'm saying maybe that's I think that's roughly where Yigoyne is roughly. I don't know, maybe a little further. Maybe a little further north. I don't know. Anyway, let's go on. Okay. So that's one explanation. Rebbe Omer Mishum Abba Yossi Ben Destoy. A different answer is Bakal the Aitim or Makam Mizbeach Dinyon. What it is is David bought the cattle and the wood and the space for the Mizbeach, which isn't that large space. All of that he bought for 50. The rest of the area that's going to be needed for the site of the Beis Mikdash, he bought for 600. So therefore, like you were saying, 650. He paid 50 for one group of things, and 600 for a different group of things. 600 for all the land, and 50 was just for the space of the Mizbeach, and the cattle and the wood, the cattle for Korbanos and the wood to be able to burn it with. Yeah. Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Yeah. Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, in the book of the Eitzim and Mokam Mizbeach and Nun, the Chalabai is called the Besheshmeis, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua says the same thing. Now on the face of it, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua is saying the same thing as Rebbe in the name of Abba Yosef ben Dizdoi. Rashi brings a different girsa. Rashi says the girsa that we have is mistaken. Rather, the correct girsa, Rashi says, is as it is in Sifri, that the three opinions are as follows. Opinion number one is, again, the Mokam Mizbeach was 50 and the rest of the area was 600. Rebbe, in the name of Abba Yossi ben Destoy, is 50 from each shevet, so 600 total. So in other words, flipping around the first two opinions. And Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua saying that what it is he paid 50, the opinion that we just ascribed to Rebbe in the name of Abba Yossi ben Destoy, in Sifri, it says that only in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. That he paid 50 for the bocher and the asim, and he paid 600 for the entire area, including the Makam Amizbeach. Yes, for the line. Well, no, okay, I guess. Now the Gemara is going to later on ask, what about the gold versus the silver? We'll get back to that. But Tosfos brings another interesting possibility, which is that in the Gemara's times and in their times and in general throughout history until close to modern times, the ratio and value between gold and silver was about 1 to 12. So therefore, if he's paying 50 shkolim of silver, then it's the same value as 600 shkolim of silver. Because in Tosfos explains, there are Gemaras that mention that the ratio between a gold dinner and a silver dinner is 1 to 24, but a gold dinner was thicker than a silver dinner. So here, what it is David is giving Aravna, according to this way of looking at it, he's giving him 50 gold shkolim that are exactly the same dimensions as silver shkolim, and therefore, with a ratio of 1 to 12, is equal to the value of 600 silver shkolim. That's the Tosfos brings. Yeah, but there's an interesting idea that a number of the Achronim bring in a couple of different places. Marsha, I think, mentions it someplace, and Sfor Shura mentions it someplace, that symbolically also, there's the idea of gold is close, is related to the sun, same color after all, silver to the moon, and what's the ratio between the circuits of the sun and of the moon in the sky? About 1 to 12, so you have 12 months in a year. So that's why it came out, that's why it comes out down here on Earth, that the ratio and value between them is 1 to 12. Marshall himself also points out someplace else, the ratio between their gematriyot is also about 1 to 12. The word kesef is almost 12 times the value, the numerical value of the word zav. Yeah, okay, anyway.
You only need one little bit of zav to get
over kesef. Okay, anyway. Getting back to the Gemara over here, the point being, Dichtiv, now you have the pasuk says like this, Vayomer Aravna el David, so Aravna says to David, Yikach v'yal Adoni ha-melech ha-tovein, you know, let my master, the king, take and offer a korbanos whatever is good in his eyes. In other words, at first, Aravna doesn't even want payment. He can take everything for free. Until David tells him, I'm not bringing korbanos for free, I'm going to pay for them. And
the same thing that
I guess similar to Avraham with the Maris Machpelah, yeah. Okay. Anyway, Re'e, and Aravna says, see, here, Habako La'ola, you can have the cattle for a Kobako or a Korban Ola, but Hamerigim will play Habako La'esim, and the Merigim, which we'll define soon what those are, and the other pieces of equipment, like the yokes and whatever, that are used with the cattle, can be used for firewood. So therefore, the point is, according to Rav Elazar ben Shamua himself, we're saying that David ended up paying 50 shkolin for the cattle and the wood or whatever, and yes, he brought the wood of the korban. So if they were previously used as merigim or clay abakar, then that's Rabbiya is saying to Rava. You see, when it comes to a bummer, you don't have to have new wood. You can have wood. That's the answer. The answer is Rava Amalach. Rava will answer. You have some nami, b'chadzi. Rava will answer. As a matter of fact, those merigim or clay abakar were new. They were made, but they'd never been used yet. Had they been used, then yes, David wouldn't have been able to use them. Had they been used, then David wouldn't have been able to use them, which fits with what Rava was saying in the story before, that here, even on a bummer, you have to have new wood. Okay. So the Gemara says, my merigim, so we have this in Avodah Zarah also, by the way. What are merigim that Aravna is offering to David? Amaullah mita shol turbal. So Ullah says, it's a bed of turbal. Well, in Bavel, they weren't familiar with that term. My mita shol turbal. I'm going to buy it. Is a the carcass of the Daishin Dishoi. It's a goat shaped thing made out of wood that has little pins and little notches sticking out of it that they use for threshing. It's in English it's called a threshing sledge. What it is you have to one part of the process, you have to thresh wheat, you have to get the kernels out of the straw and shells and whatever, and you have to break up the straw itself into smaller. So what do? So you have a flat piece of wood. It has you embed into it different things. You embed into it different things that stick out, like nails, stones, or whatever. You glue them to it or whatever. You also have in it you have notches and crevices and things like that. The point is, it's got a very rough surface on the bottom. You put it on top of the grain, on top of the mixed grain and shells and straw and whatever. You have it, you stand on it, sometimes you stand on it to make it heavier while oxen are pulling it around and around, and therefore the pressure of it, the pressure and the roughness of it causes the shells to break open, and that's how you get out the grain. So that is the merigim, so the main thing of it is made out of wood, and that's what Aravna is offering to David for fire. I'm going to buy a Microsoft. I buy it because we already have a pasuk. We see from that what merigim are. They have a pasuk in Yeshaya. Hine samtich l'morag chorutzot and asher of lakotot. Hine samtich, Hashem says to the Jewish people, behold, I have made you Jewish people, l'morag chorutzot, like a new grooved morag. Again, we're saying the morag is a threshing sledge. Baal pisios, which has sharp edges and sharp edges and crevices and things. And the pasuk continues, you'll use that to you'll thresh the mountains and the hills, representing metaphorically it means that the power of the Jewish people will overcome the power of their enemies. So therefore, so we see that a morag is something that's used for threshing, and that has sharp edges and corners and things sticking out of it. Okay. Makri le Rava lebrei. One time Rava, or Racha, as Shitamukbasa says, is one time reading this pasuk, reading the psukim to his son. And then he pointed out to him, you know, you have another contradiction that we haven't dealt with yet between the two psukim again. So we have one place that says that he paid 50 and the other would say that he paid 600, and we have a few different ways of reconciling it. Is it 50 from each shevet for a total of 600? Is it 50 for the makom on his beach and 600 for the rest of the area? Or is it 50 for the bakar and the eitzim and 600 for the land? So now he points it out. There's another contradiction we haven't dealt with yet. Okay, first we have the contradiction about 50 versus 600. And he explained, like he explained before, okay, said, Gova, we call Shevet, the Shevet Kamishim, Shem Sheshmeis, he collected 50 from each Shevet for a total of 600. But then, Vakhafi, Kashin, Adadi, but he's still left with a contradiction between the Sukhim, Hosam Kesef, Hosam Zahav. In Zibra Yomim, it describes that he gave him Shikle Zahav, and in Shmuel, it says that he gave him the Kesef Shalom Kamishim. So what is it? Was it silver or was it gold? So that's the thing. So Tosfos said before it mentioned, brought to the Medrash, that it meant he gave him gold shalim, which the total value of them is equivalent to 600 silver shalim. But here, Ela Hafikama, Gova Kesef, the Mishkal, Shesh Me'ezav. So what it means is, so here, Rava, Rachva, is saying the other way around. It means he collected silver from the Jewish people to the total weight of 600 shalim of gold. So in other words, he collected from each, from each shevet, we still are saying that he collected individually from each shevet, but he collected enough from each shevet that the total amount he's paying Aravna is the weight of 600, of 600 shtalim of gold.
The equivalent of
600 shtalim of gold in silver, exactly.
And that's why
it says silver in one place and gold in the other place, right? Well, so it was silver, but it was to the weight of gold, and therefore he uses the expression shiklei zahav and dirayah. Okay. Now, going back to, the Mishnah had said, so now all this time we've been dealing with the Braita that mentioned the rules about korbanos before the Mishkan was set up versus after the Mishkan was set up, and then we mentioned that the Braita had said goyim are allowed to still follow the old rules nowadays. That led up into the whole discussion. So now, getting back to our Mishnah, we said that during the period when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, we said that Kodshim Kalam Ne'acholin B'chol Machin Yisrael. We're talking about while the Mishkan was in the desert, all the 40 years in the desert. We said that Kodshim Kalam Ne'acholin B'chol Machin Yisrael, that Kodshim Kalim could be eaten anywhere in the camp of the Jewish people. So Rav Huna says that means anywhere where Jews are, which the Rashi explains, the Gemara is assuming, that means even let's say a Yid leaves the Machne for whatever reason, he's allowed to take Kodshim along with him and eat them there. So even though the Machne, on the face of it, that's what it means. In other words, you have the Machne is over here, but let's say a Yid travels over here for business or for sightseeing or whatever, according to the way we assume of what Rav Huna is saying. It sounds like he's still allowed to use Kodshim Kalim there. Avo machna loyham. So he says, avo machna loyham. There was not a machna at the time. There was not a machna, meaning on the face of it, it means they're not limited to the machna at that time. They're allowed to eat it even if they happen to be outside the machna, on the face of it. Some of the Achronim want to learn differently, that maybe what he means is Ma'abal Machna Lehavi means at that point in history you weren't allowed, at least the Gemara is assuming that it meant you're not allowed to eat them in Machna Yisrael. You're allowed to eat them in Machna Shechina, in the Mishkan, and you're allowed to eat them in Machna Levir, with Levim or something, but not in Machna Yisrael. The eighth state of Nachman, the Rav Huna, said of Nachman after Rav Huna, what do you mean, Machna is the Midbar Lehavoi? What do you mean, in the Midbar there was no Machna? Meaning, according to Rashi's explanation, that you were allowed to eat them even if you happened to be outside the Machna, or according to the other explanation, that you're not allowed to eat them in Machna itself. But how can you? But we don't know, right? Because Shevish and Machna by Midbar, just as they had three Machnas in the Midbar, Kach Machna by Yerushalayim. So also they have three Machnas, as far as Dinim of Kodshim, and as far as Tum of Atara, in Yerushalayim. Namely, Yerushalayim had a bias Machna itself, from the beginning of Yerushalayim, from the walls of Yerushalayim, until the walls of the Harabayis is the equivalent of Machne Yisrael, and, for example, in the third act, to stay out of that area. Meharabayis, the Shah Nikon, or Machne Leviyah, from the Har HaBayis until the Shaar Nikono, which is the entrance into the Azara proper, is Machna Leviva, and among others, a Zov and a Zova and so forth are not allowed to be there. The Kanveilach, Machna Shtina, from then on, from Shaar Nikono, the entire rectangular area of the Azara, is Machna Shtina, where no Tmeim are allowed. The Hain Hain Koin Shemamidra, and Machna Shtina. Zorim are allowed in Zorim are allowed in part of it. They're allowed in Ezra Tzitzirah, but it's not allowed in Ezra Tzitzirah.
So this is
Machna Shechina is the entire rectangle 187 by 135 Amos, which includes the Ezra Tzitzirah, the Ezra Tzitzirah, the place of the Mizbeach, Bein Olam Vlam Mizbeach, and the Hechel. The Hein Hein Kloin Shem Amidbar. And the Braiser says Machna Shechina corresponds to the area within the Kloin, the area within the curtains of the chotzer in the midbar. So obviously then the Braiser is telling us that there were three machnas there, and therefore there is machna Yisrael, and therefore presumably that it means that they could eat korbanos only in that machna Yisrael, so they can't eat them if they happen to be outside of that. And it also means the other way around. It means that you don't say they can't eat it in machna Yisrael. They could, just as in later times you could eat them anywhere in your shalayim.
Does the machna Yisrael?
Yeah, why not? No, the Kohenim is also. It's not Kochikotchim, obviously. Kochikotchim, although it's the Azara. Ela Ema B'chol Maka Machna Yisrael. So no, what you have to do is you have to change the wording a little bit. Not that you could eat it wherever Jews are, but B'chol Maka Machna Yisrael. They could eat the Kochim Kalim anywhere in the Machna of the Jewish, anywhere in the Machna of Yisrael, meaning, in other words, Rashi says, even when they broke camp, and they're trapped, even when they broke camp, the Korbanos do not become possible. The camp is still considered to continue to exist even when they're on the move. So they won't be able to eat them while they're traveling, but once they set up camp in the next place in the Midbar, then they can, as long as the time for eating a particular korban hasn't expired, then they can continue eating it in the new place, in the new machmeh. We don't say that it became possible as soon as they broke camp, that now there's no more machmeh. The point that Rav Huna is saying, but that the Mishnah is saying, b'chol machna Yisrael, and that Rav Huna is clarifying, b'chol makom Yisrael, means even when they're on the move, the machna is still considered to be in existence. And therefore, pending when they can to the next place. Well, that's the point. Nevertheless, we're saying,
you know which machna was which machna?
Yeah, because they're like this. You have Shevet Yehuda is traveling here, Shevet Yisrael is traveling here. So the machna is where they are. Again, it means, in other words, the korbanos that Rashi is learning, they can't eat the korbanos on the way while they're walking, but they can eat the same korbanos once they pitch camp in the new place. Then people
and they put it in
the mishkan and everything is then put back up. Yeah, then they can. Yeah. Because otherwise you would think that. Well, the Gemara Pshita, isn't that obvious? And the answer is Ma'od Tema Ifsul B'Yosa. You would think that not. Maybe once everything is taken down and they're traveling, maybe these korbanos should become possible because they went out of Machna Yisrael. Maybe it's considered. Now they left the place where Machna Yisrael was before, so the korban became possible. From Mashma Lon, that is the chiddush. Therefore, that we're saying that not.
So 1 second. They could not eat the korbanos when they were traveling.
When they're traveling, but they could continue eating them at the next stop. Exactly.
Why would you think when they went to the next stop, they rebuilt them?
Because the fact of the matter is, it went out of the machna in between. Because here you have machna of Yehuda, let's say, was here. Now the machna of Yehuda is not here because they're on the move. So you would think as soon as they left the area, the footprint where they had been before, then maybe it became possible. We're informing us that
they couldn't be rebuilding the Mishkan in another place.
The Mishkan rebuilt in another place, fine, makes that now it's a new place, but maybe every korban that was taken out of it. As a matter of fact, actually, Tosfos actually has a different explanation of it. Tosfos says, first of all, that they may have been allowed to eat it even while they're walking. On the other hand, Tosfos also brings, there could be a difference in this regard between different types of kodshim. When it comes to, for example, lechem aponim or other kodshim, then actually, yes, we would say once the Mishkan is taken down, they would become possible because of Yosef, because now they've left the area where the Mishkan was. Tosfos brings, for example, a Gemara in Menachos and a Gemara from earlier in Armas Sefer that implies that when they took down the Mishkan, the lechem aponim that was on the Shulchan became possible because of the equivalent of Yosef, that it was taken out of the place of the Mishkan.
Even
though they set it up in the new place, it already became possible. But anyway, so here we're saying, Kodsh and Kalim. That's what Tosfos is learning over here. There's a difference between Kodsh and Kalim and Kodsh and Kodsh and Kodsh.
Would become
possible, Kodsh and Kalim wouldn't. And Tosfos is learning, unlike Rashi, that Kodsh and Kalim are not only not possible, but they can even eat them while they're on the road. Okay. So the question is, maybe Taka, yes. Maybe as soon as they broke camp, then all the Kodsh and Kalim become possible as well. No, the answer is Omar Krov, not the oil moyed. Yes, but the pastor says the oil moyed should travel in fine. Alpha should not the oil moyed. Even though it's traveling, it's still considered the oil moyed, and therefore you still have machmas. But that's why we need the pastor to be telling us that, and that's what the missionary is telling us. Because machmas as well, we wouldn't have realized that otherwise.
When they're traveling.
Yeah. Okay.
When they're not traveling, they have a new.
When they're right. But so then, oh, and a new kovanis that are brought in that new place. Of course, yeah. Of course. Again, according to Torah, with Kodesh Kalim versus Kodesh Kalim. Now, besides the three machnas that we mentioned before, Machna Yisrael, which is the city of Yerushalayim, Machna Leviyah, which is the Harabayit, and Machna Shina, which is the Azorah,
except
the Azorah. Right. There was another area when it came to the Beit Hamikdash, the Chayil Ezras Noshim, and it was the Chayil Ezras Noshim. There were a few different Yerushalayim over here. It's either the Chayil the Ezras Noshim, or Dashi and Shittim, we're going to take out the word Chayil altogether. The truth is, there were both of them, but the Loi Hoyo Unshin Aleha, but there was no penalty for that. There's Mishnayot at the beginning of Kalim that mentioned that actually within Eretz Yisrael, there are 10 levels of Kedusha, one higher than that, beginning with Eretz Yisrael as a whole, walled cities, the city of Yerushalayim, etc. So in there it mentions, you have like this. The Harabayit, Zovim and Zovit are not allowed over there. But for example, Tommy Mess is allowed there. Midar Raisa. Yes. Because the Harabayit is the equivalent of Machna Leviyah, and the Gemara mentions elsewhere, we find that Moshe had Yosef's bones with him in Machna Leviyah. So we see that even a mess, so we see that even a mess himself is allowed in Harabayit, how much more so a Tommy. No, the reason. Yeah, that's true, but sometimes we're also Talmud with Tumah Yosel and the Gulfari. Sometimes it can be Baal Keri or Zobim or what have you. And besides that, also, the fact is we don't know where exactly the Azora began because everything's been destroyed. In theory, if we knew where everything was and the only problem was Tumah Mess, we would be able to go into parts of the Harabai. But because we don't know that. Anyway, and also because we may have, some of us have, Tumah Yosel and the Gulfari, some of us. Okay, anyway, the point is that the Rav Shimon ben Yochai is saying, you should know, there are other gradations over there. You have the Mishnah and Caleb mentions like this. In the Harabayas, again, Zovim and Zobes and Nidus and Yoldus and the Saroyim are not allowed, but a Tomim Mess is. Then you have, though, and Goyim would also be allowed. Then you have...
In
Yerushalayim itself, of course, they're allowed. The Harabayas is greater than Yerushalayim. Nope. Then you have, though, there's the Chayil, which is the Chayil, which is an area surrounding the Ezra Yisrael and the Ezra, the Hazara and the Ezra Snashim, where it's marked off by the Surig, the wooden lattice wall fence. Goyim and Tomim Mess are not allowed to go in there, but that's only Midrabam. So therefore, he's saying, Aloha Unshin Aleha, there's no penalty Midaraisa for that, because that whole concept that Goyim and Tomim Mess are not allowed to go into it is only Midrabam. And then you have also the Ezra's Noshim as a further thing. The Ezra's Noshim is, again, Midaraisa Tvula Yoim can go into it. Midrabanim, we've learned a few times in chats, including earlier in Amasekta, we learned that Yahushophat's times, they made a Xera, that Tvula Yoim, they made a Sakana, that Tvula Yoim are not allowed to enter into the Ezra's Noshim. So you have those extra gradations, below your ancient aware, but there's no penalty for them because they're not Daraisa. Okay. Then we continue. Now this that we're saying, that there's three machnas in the Midbar, and corresponding to that, there are three machnas in Yerushalayim. With Shiloh, when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, it's not like that. There were only two machnas. So which one is missing? Which one was there not at the time of Shiloh? Amar Rabba, or Abaya, Mistadrab the Machna Leviyah Avoy. It must be logical to say that what was missing was Machna Leviyah. You can't say Machna Shina was missing, obviously. The Mishkan was set up over there. On the face of it, you can't say that Machna... just the opposite. You're saying the Sabbath of Machna Leviyah has a voice. You have to say that it means that there was something considered Machna Leviyah. There may not have been something considered to be Machna Yisrael at that time, but there must have been something that was considered Machna Leviyah. the Isak that Machna Leviya Loi Havoi, because if you're going to tell me that at the time of Shiloh there was no such thing as Machna Leviya, you went straight from Machna Shina to Machna Yisrael, Nimtu Zobin, the Tmei Met, the Mishtakin Chos for Machna Achat. The result of that is going to be that Zobin and Tmei Met are both sent out of only one Machna, only out of Machna Shina. Because now both Zobin and Tomin Mes are allowed in Machna Yisrael, meaning in the desert and the camping area of the Kol Shvatim, and after this mitzvah is built in the city of Yerushalayim, Zobin and Tomin Mes are allowed there. But we know from the Gemara and Sochin that deals with all these giving that each major classification of Tumah has a different number of Machnas that have to be sent out of. The Torah says they should not make their machanos in the plural, machanehem, their machanes in the plural, tome, implying ten machna lezeh or machna lezeh, implying there has to be a separate machna for zovim versus for tome nes. So if you're going to tell me that there was no machna Yisrael, then fine. It means that, therefore, the tome and nes are not allowed into machna shchina, they're not allowed into the mishkan itself in Shiloh, but they're allowed to be anywhere else. And the Zavim are not allowed to be, let's say, in the city of Shiloh, or wherever, or whatever we would consider to be Machna Leviya. But if you're going to tell me there's no Machna Leviya, then it means both the Zavim and the Tmei Met are not allowed to be in the area of the Mishkan, in the Mishkan compound, but they're allowed to be any place outside of that. Then it's not 10 Machna Leviya, ever Machna Leviya. So obviously, says Rabbah or Abaya, logically, you have to say that it must be. If there was a Machna missing at the time of Shiloh, it must be Machna Yisrael.
And
Machna Leviya means, in other words, that the Zobim versus the Tmei Met have to have different Machnas that they're sent out of.
And if one is lacking,
then if Machna Leviya is lacking, then you end up with both of them, and then you end up with both of them only out of one Machna. Amalei Rava Elamai Machna Yisrael Lo Havoi. So Rava says, so what are you going to explain? You're going to tell me that it means that there was no Machna Yisrael, Nimtu Zobim and Mitzaray Mishtaf on the Machna Machad. Then you have the same problem between a Zobim and a Soda. A Soda is supposed to be sent out of Machna Yisrael. A Zob is on... The third is supposed to be out of all three machnas,
right.
Shchina, Leviya, and Yisrael. A Zav only has to be outside two machnas, Shchina and Leviya. So if you're going to tell me there's no machna Yisrael, then the Zav and the Mitzrayim are allowed to be in the same area. And again, the Torah says about a Mitzrayim that you should dwell alone, meaning no other type of Tome is allowed to dwell there with him. Implying that you can't have a situation where the Zoven and the Soda can end up conceivably being in the same place. So no matter how you do it, you're arguing that there has to have been a Machna Leviya because of Zoven versus Nehemes, but by the same logic, you should have to argue there had to have been a Machna Yisrael for the same reason in order to distinguish between Zoven and Mitzray. Ela la'olam kulu tzlatahavu. So no, there were actually, even at the time of Shiloh, all three Machnas existed. There was a Machna Shina, there was something that was considered Machna Leviya. We don't know what it was exactly. It may have been the city of Shiloh. It may have been some area within Shiloh. We don't know. And there was a Machna Yisrael.
So the
Zavim would have to stay out of Machna Leviya. Let's say we assume that Machna Leviya consists of the whole city of Shiloh. So Zavim would have to stay out of that. Tmei Met only have to stay out of Mishkan, but they could be in the city of Shiloh. And then the Tzoraim would have to be out of Machna Yisrael, meaning out of any walled city in Eretz Yisrael.
So
you have all three. Yeah, that's the point. You have all three. What do we mean when we said before that there were only two machnas at the time of Shiloh? We mean something else. Liklita. We mean in the sense that in the time of Shiloh, there were only two places where a reseach, the shogig, could go to be safe. Meaning, in other words, that in the midbar you have like this. In the midbar you had the mizbeach. Because you have the pasuk in midbash the kachanu lamus that by a deliberate murderer, that by murderer made it, you take him away from the zayach to die, meaning the zayach doesn't give him any sanctuary. But for reseach the shogig it does. We had a while back we had the story in Makos how Yoya grabbed the hold of the corners of the zayach in order to try and protect himself from Shloima, except he made a number of mistakes over there. It only works for Shogig and he was amazed. It only works for Mizbeach in the Mishkan or the permanent Beit HaMikdash, not the Mishkan and Givon, etc. But anyway, the point is the concept exists that the Mizbeach offers sanctuary for Reseach the Shogig. And as the Gemara is going to say soon, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, you also had in the desert, there were also Machna Levia, the area where the Levium lived, or rather the area where the Levium camped around the Mishkan, was also considered an Ir Mitzvot. It was also considered a place where people could run away, where Rotsim could run away to safety. What we're saying is that in Shiloh, you only had two. In the cloud in the Midbar have always called Machna Levia. So what are you telling me? That in the Midbar, Machna Levia was a place of Klita? So in other words, in Shiloh, we're saying there's Beach and then there's Orin Mitzvot. You're telling me that in the Midbar, you had Machna Levia was available for that purpose? The answer is Ain. For Klita. And the answer is Ain. Indeed it was. V'hotanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa. Now the pasuk, we have a pasuk in Parashat Mishpatim that says Vasher lo sada, a person didn't deliberately go out, didn't set out to kill somebody, and he did accidentally. Well, the king Inal Yada, Hashem caused it to happen. Appropriate, by the way, because we're coming up to Elul. Inal Yada the Samti Lach is one of the Rosh Tevas of Elul. But Inal the Samti Lachom Lachem, Hashem says I will designate for you a place. Asher Yonu Shama, that he can run away over there. So the Braita explains that the phrase "Samti Lachom Makom" means "Bechayecha." The "Samti Lachom Makom" means "Bechayecha." Means Hashem is telling Moshe, in your lifetime, there will already be the beginning of such a thing. Namely, Rashi explains we have in Parashas Vayikra where Moshe designated the first three Arei Mikvah. They didn't actually take effect. The Gemara tells us in Makos they didn't take effect until the parallel three were designated in Eretz Yisrael. But nevertheless, Moshe had this push to set them up. They had three in Eber Ayagim, in the territories of Reuven, Gad, and half Manasseh. They had three Orem Mitzvot. Beth Bamidbar, Beth Hamishar, Beth Yomish Bagila, Beth Golan Mabasha.
Before that,
they didn't have Orem Mitzvot, but the point is, that's the thing, we're going to say they went to Machna Levia. But the point is, when Hashem uses the expression, the Santi Lachom Makom, I will give for you a place. For you means Hashem is speaking to Moshe. B'chayacha. During your lifetime, you'll see the beginning of it. And when he says makom means mekom cha, means your place, hinting at the idea that the place where Moshe is camping, meaning in Machna Levia, because Moshe is one of the Levian, is a place of klita, the place of mikvah. Yeah. Oh, but he's from Shevet Levi is the point. Kohenim also camped on one side. Fine, okay. So they're, eventually, when they settled in Eretz Yisrael, of the six Arei Mikvot and the other 42 Arei Levian, which also work as Arei Mikvot, 12 of them were given to the Kohanim, and the other 36 were given to the Levium. So yeah, Kohanim and Levium for the purpose are interchangeable. And when it says Asher Yonu Shoma, when the prophet finishes off that he can run away there, Melamed Shemaglin Bamidbar, that teaches us that this concept of Golus, for Reseach Hashogeg, existed in the Midbar as well. Lahechem Golin, now where would a person go into Golus in the Midbar, since they didn't yet have Arei Mikvot? L'machna Levia, they would go to Machna Levia. So that's what we're saying. When they came and built the Mishkan and Shiloh, there's no such thing as Machna Levia anymore. Then you have the Arei Mikvot, which are scattered all over Eretz Yisrael. As opposed to, in the Midbar, you would have Machna Levia adjacent to the Mishkan. Mikan Amru, based on this, the Chachamim said, we have a din, Ben Levi Shaharag, if a Levi himself, now Levim themselves, live in all the 48, or in all the 48 cities around Eretz Yisrael, so if a Levi kills somebody with Shogig, Gola Mipelech Lepelech, he goes in Golos from one Pelech, which Rashi says means a neighborhood, to a different neighborhood. Within the Ir Mitzvah. Being Golos Lepilchai, and if he goes into Golos in his own neighborhood, Pilchai, actually supposed to say, supposed to be the Koch, Kiltai, is Kolachim, in his own neighborhood. The Tosfos discusses that what that can mean, what does that mean that he's supposed to go to a different Pelech, but if he goes to his own Pelech, then it works. The Tosfos says it can mean that Machachila, he should be going to a different city. In fact, Tosfos says, based on a Gemara in Makos, properly speaking, a Ben Levi who killed should be going to a different city. Not the city that he lives in, but a different one of the 48 Arei Mikvot. If he goes to his own city, to his own neighborhood, then it's Kolachim B'diyeh. That's one explanation, Tosfos. That's Kolachim B'diyeh. It's still protected from right. Another explanation Tosfos says is that what we're telling him is you're better off if you go to a different city. Because if you go to a different city, then you can move around anywhere within the city and you'll be safe. But if you go to your own city and you move to a different neighborhood, you will be limited only to that neighborhood. If you ever leave there and go to the other neighborhood, you're going to be in trouble. The going on John from the gate. So according to that second explanation in Tosfos, when we say go to the Mikelach Lepelach, the Golah Lepilkoi, we're talking about it's a better idea for him. He's better off if he goes to another city. Then he has more freedom of movement. But if he goes to one different neighborhood in his own city, okay, it'll be kosher to him, but he should know that he's limited only to that neighborhood. The Rambam has yet a different explanation there. The Rambam understands that it means like this. If the lazy killed within the Ir Niklat, within one of the 48 cities themselves, then he has to move to a different city. That city is not kosher to him, because he has to go into Galus. On the other hand, if he's killed outside the city, and he runs away to back to his own city, back to his own house in the city, then the Di'evit is kosher to him.
But he has to stay.
But he has to stay. Well, until the Kohen Gadol dies. Okay. Anyway, the point is, so we see from that's how it was. In the Midbar, you can go to Machna Levia, and parallel to that, we have therefore that a Levi in later times can go to his own Mikvah or to a different one and be safe. Right. Mikra. Now, where do you have a pasuk that expresses that? Because the pasuk says to the Mikvah Toy Yeshiv, it says you should dwell in his Mikvah. His, implying Irshakol Pasei Kvar, so we're talking about a city that already accepted him one time, it can re-accept him, in other words. So that's what we mean, that he moves to a different neighborhood in the same city, and it still works. The point being, in other words, that again, we see that, so that's what we mean. In the Midbar, you have the horns of the Mizbeach, and you have the Machna Leviah. In Shiloh, you didn't have the horns of the Mizbeach anymore. All you had was saying were two places. Or no, you'd have still the horns in the Zayach, and instead of Machna Levia, you have the 48 cities around Eretz Yisrael. That's what I mean, that there were only two places. You shouldn't think that there's a Machna Levia surrounding the Mishkan like there was in the Midbar. No, the equivalent of Machna Levia is the 48 cities scattered around Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Bowl of Yogol. Next we said in the Mishnah that eventually, we said when they crossed the Yarden, they first set up the Mishkan in Gilgal, and it stood there for 14 years. So we said, when the Mishkan was in Gilgal.
It's just
across the Yarden, right. Near Yerichai. So we said, when the Mishkan was in Gilgal, we said, so now, Bomo Samnitzer, Kodshe Kodshim still have to be eaten inside the courtyard of the Mishkan in Gilgal, but Kodshim Kalim could be eaten anywhere in the entire country. The whole month. We learn in a Brasa. What korbanos were you able to bring during that period? Now, we've touched on this issue earlier in the parak about what kind of korbanos were able to be brought on bomos when bomos are mutter, and also on a bom of gola during the period in Gilgal when it's called a bom of gola. So, we learn in a Brasa. Kol nidav nidav hayakarev babama. Any korban that can be done by neder or nedava can be offered on a bom of chana. And Rashi says, of necessity, we have to be talking about a bom of Kana, because if we're talking about a bom of Gola, the fact is they brought a korban Pesach, we discussed this the other day, and a korban Pesach is a korban that's required. And we know the Pesach mentions that they brought a korban Pesach in Gilgal over there 4 days after they entered out of Israel. So we know that Choyvat Sibur at least can be brought on the bom of Gola. What we mean when we say over here, call a nidiv a nidiv, korba boma, we mean on a bom of Kana. Meaning, on a bom of Kana, you cannot bring any obligatory korban. No chatas, no osham. Only something that's neder. Well, they would have to bring it on a bama gzara. Mincho nezirus craven babama, divir of mayor. So the mayor says in that connection, that means that also, besides the obvious things, ola and shlomim, which can be brought by neder and adava, it means that also a korban mincha, and also the korbanos of a nazir, could be brought on a bama gzara during those years. Because even though the korbanos of a nazir are something eventually, once he finishes his nazir, he's obligated to bring them. But the original nazir itself comes about through a nether. Therefore, that can be considered nidav and nidav. And therefore, says Rav Meir, such korbanos could be brought by a bomb. Kama. By private bomb. That's Rav Meir, but at the moment, like Kobu Yachad, Allah Olus and Shlom Milad. The Chum say no, only Olus and Shlom. No Menachos, no nazir. Rav Yehuda says, here's another way of looking at it. Kol Shas Sibur v'hayochid makrivin v'oil marriage of a member. Any korbanos that Sibur or an individual were able to offer in the oil moed, in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, makrivin v'oil moed sheva Gilgal, they could also offer them in Gilgal. In other words, therefore, so we have three opinions. In other words, we have Reb Meir saying only Lidav and Nidav, which is Ola, Shlomim, Mincha, and Nazirus. The Chum saying only Ola and Shlomim.
What?
Nida means that the difference between a neder and a davar is a neder is somebody says, hare olai, I obligate myself to bring a korban, where therefore he's responsible for it until the korban is actually booked. Nidav, if he says, Hare Zu, he says to begin with, this animal I'm designated as a korban, which means, therefore, if the animal becomes unavailable for a korban, then that's it. He has no further for you. So Rashi explains on the basis of the Gemara is going to say later that the Chachamim and Reb Meir are saying that even on a Bum of Doyla, not everything could be brought. Only Nidorim and Nidorim. The Yachim, only Nidorim and Nidorim. Even on the Bum of Doyla, Reb Meir and the Chachamim seem to be saying that a Yachid was still limited to what Korbanos he could bring in Gilgal. So therefore, sort of Yehuda is arguing with that and saying, no, Kol Shas Sibru VaYachid Makriven BaOil Moedjer Neber, any korban that the Sibru or the Yachid are able to bring in the desert, which is both voluntary and obligatory korbanos, Makriven BaOil Moedjer Gilgal, they could also offer such korbanos on the Bum of Doyla in the Mishkan in Gilgal. Chacham would say, in other words, that a Yachid can't bring a Chachas or an Asham, not only not on a private Bama, but even on a public Bama. And Reb Meir says the same thing. Reb Meir just says that they can bring. Let's go like this. The Chachamim are saying that when it comes to private korbanos, never mind public korbanos. We haven't yet gotten into public korbanos. We'll get to that later. Private korbanos, the Chachamim are saying the only ones that can be brought during the 14 years of Gilgal are Oilus and Shlom. Nothing else. That's, we had that a few days ago in the Gemara, where we had for that reason that a chatas or an osham during that period would be mechusas man, because you have to wait until the time when the Mishkan and Shiloh is built, and then you can be mak with them. Reb Meir agrees with that basic concept, but he says, however, besides the Ola and Shlomim, you could also offer other things that can be brought b'neder and adava, namely a mincha or a nazir. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that no, any korban that a yachid could bring in the midbar, a yachid can also bring in Gilgal. But also a chatas and an oshem. He agrees you can't bring them on a private mizbeach, but you can bring them on the public mizbeach and Gilgal. Ma ben oyo moyach of a midbar ben oyo moyach of a Gilgal. So what is the difference, says Rabbi Yehuda, between oyo moyach in the midbar and oyo moyach in Gilgal? So like this, oyo moyach of a midbar lahir bomus mataris. During the time when they were in the midbar, bomus were offered, any korbanos had to be in the Mishkan. Whereas when it was in Gilgal, Bamas and Motus.
That doesn't explain it. They could offer one
Tzaddik. That's the thing. Rabbi Hodeh is saying there's no difference. Rabbi Hodeh is saying they could. Any type of korban that they could offer in the Midbar, they could also offer in Gilgal. People could also offer in Gilgal. Ubamasah Shabarash Gaga. And he continues. So a Bama that a person would make, let's say, on his own roof, with a Bamas Yachid, in other words, a Bama Chana, Loi Haya Makrav Alaya Ela Oilo Shlomim. Fine, he could only bring on it Oilo and Shlomim. To that extent, he agrees with the Chachamim against Reb Meir, where the Meir had said that a person could bring on his private Bama Oilo and Shlomim, Menachos and Naziros. Reb Yehuda agrees with the Chachamim on that. That they can't. The Chachamim say, Kol Shas Sibu Makrivin Ba'oyo Marijo Rebbe. No, it's like this. The rule about the similarity between the midbar and Gilgal is anything that the Sibur could bring in the oil moir in the midbar, makriven ba oil moir shabat Gilgal, but not a yochid, but can ba can like kovu yochid ala oilo shlom dolan. Both in the midbar and in Gilgal, the chachamim here are learning this is the fourth opinion, or actually Rashi explains the Gemara is going to say later on the face of it. This seems to be the same opinion as the chachamim, but can ba can not in the midbar, but can ba can. Whether in a private bama or whether in a public bama, a yachid can only like over yachid ala olo shlom bavad. A yachid can only bring olo and shlom, which sounds exactly like the chachamim before, which the Gemara is going to ask later. In that case, why are we repeating it? In that case, why are we repeating it as a different opinion? Reb Shimon said, here's yet another opinion. On the face of the two of the chachamim are the same, right? But Reb Shimon says, here's another opinion. All of you are saying that there's no difference as far as the Sibur, that whatever the Sibur could bring in the Midbar, they could bring in Gilgal. I disagree with that premise, says Reb Shimon. Ah, Sibur, lahikruvu, elapsakim, even the Sibur, all they could bring of their required korbanos in Gilgal is the korban Pesach, which has a fixed time for it, and the chovis shekavur lahem zman, and other obligatory korbanos that have a fixed time. So for example, the Chum is, of Sibu we're talking about, of the Sibu, with a certain date where it has to be brought. So the Talmud, the Sof and the Shabbos and the Shkodesh and the Yom Tovim, the Karbonis of Yom Kippur, etc. But not, for example, the Parhelim Dover or the Seiri Avodah Tzuchavim. Rashi learns that those Rav Shimon is saying you could not bring them in Gilgal because those don't have a fixed time.
So what did you bring them?
So you didn't. That's it. You couldn't bring them during those years.
You couldn't bring them.
The Sanhedrin made a mistake in those years. You couldn't do anything about it. Tosfos actually points out later on the Gemara is going to say that Rav Shimon is not saying that all korbanos that have a fixed time can be offered on the Mizbeach and Gilgal. Rav Shimon is actually going to distinguish later on between other kinds of korbanos and chatos, where Rav Shimon later on is going to end up saying later on in the sugya that no chatos tzibur could be brought in Gilgal. Which means, it's not even a matter of time versus not time. It's a matter of two factors. It needs to be something that has a fixed time, and it has to be and it has to be an oiva. So none of the chatois of Yerugolim, none of the chatois of Yom Kippur, according to Rav Shimon, could have been offered during those 14 years in Gilgal. We're going to learn later on Kuf Yud Ches. We'll learn tomorrow about the Shem White. We'll see. We'll get there. Now that's what he's saying. So we have four opinions. We'll break over here as soon as I reiterate four opinions. We have four opinions so far, and then we'll continue tomorrow where the Gemara will analyze the different opinions. So we have as follows. Again, we have the Chachamim saying that the Sibur could bring all korbanos in Gilgal. A Yachid could only bring Olus and Shlomim. In Gilgal, and also they could only bring Olus and Shlomim on their private Mizbeach. The mayor says, same thing as far as the Sibur. However, the Yochid could bring either in Gilgal or on his private Mizbeach, he could bring Olus, Shlomim, and Menachos, and Nezibus. He also says that a Yochid could bring his Choiva in Gilgal. So he's arguing with the Chachamim on the Chachamim are saying a Yochid can only bring Olus and Shlomim. He's saying, but in Gilgal itself, he could bring Chachos and Ashlomos as well. Just on his private bomber, he could only bring four types of Korbanos. Olus, Shlomim, Mincha, and Nezibus. Rabbi Yehuda saying that anything that you brought in the Midbar, you could bring in Gilgal. There's no difference whatsoever between the Oyo Moed and the Midbar and the Oyo Moed and Gilgal except that Bomei is up there. And Rav Shimon saying even within the Sibur, there's a limitation what they could bring in Gilgal. So those are the opinions, and then we'll get back to the Gemara tomorrow, and we'll analyze why each of them holds what he